Oh, hello, and welcome to Textual Tension. I am your co-host, Rachel, and I pop in here every other week to tell you about some business that we got going on. All them business. and I'm also here with your co-host, Bitsy. Bitsy, you want to say hello? Mm-hmm, yep. Very important news. Good job. Thank you. Hey, let's get down to it, huh? We have a really great episode for you guys today, but before that, I need to tell you about something else that's really great. This week, we have not one, not two, but two new patrons on Patreon. So hey, Victoria and James, you guys are awesome. Thank you so much for supporting us. We really appreciate it. And I hope you're enjoying all that cool, cool stuff you're getting. And hey, if you are potentially interested in supporting us on Patreon, you can head on over to patreon.com/textualtension and check out all the cool stuff over there. We actually just had a new seasonal episode drop for Valentine's Day. It was a blast. And those ones are long ones, guys. It was like almost 2.5 hours long. So we have a lot of fun with them. So there's all kinds of cool stuff over there. So head on over and maybe consider supporting us. And hey, if you're not in a position financially or whatever to support us, that's totally fine. 100% cool. But what would really help is if you could go on like Apple Podcasts or anything like that. And hey, leave us a review. We would really appreciate it. We will send you stickers if you do it. And then send us a picture of your review. And hey, free stuff. Who doesn't love free stuff? Honestly. So if you could do that, that would be really, really helpful. And hey, maybe tell a friend about us. We don't pay to advertise the show, and it really, really helps us if you just kind of spread the word for us. And hey, we love you for it. Thank you. Hey, hit us up on all of the social medias if you have anything you want to say about this book, because there's a lot to say about this book. Or any of the other ones that we've done. We are at Textual Tension Pod on all of the social media platforms. That's the Instagram, the Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff. We have a website, textualtensionpod.com. We are textualtensionpod@gmail.com if you want to email us, all kinds of stuff. We get all kinds of book recommendations, and we love to get them, so hit us up. And, oh gosh, we have merch. Haven't said that in a while. We're at TeePublic. There's a link to that store on our website and on our Instagram. And, hey, I hope you had a great Valentine's Day. Whether it was just for you or with someone else, know that we love you. So, you know, there's that. And I think that's it as far as business goes. So for your romance novel wisdom this week, I'm going to leave you with this really interesting and just honestly fascinating statistic. The average person has about one testicle. So, you know, you have that now. And hey, without further ado, go ahead and please enjoy episode 64, Horny for Some Self-Sacrifice. Oh, love, tearing me apart from the inside out so I can see myself from the inside. Hello, and welcome to Textual Tension, a love-hate relationship with romance novels. I am your co-host, Margie.
And I'm your co-host, Rachel.
And this is our other podcast, Athena, who's making herself very known today, and I want you guys to know
so
that. Every other week, one of us reads and summarizes a romance novel for the other unsuspecting co-host. This week, that co-host is Rachel.
It me.
It you. And together, we unpack what the fuck just happened. Oh, boy, listeners. 2 weeks ago, Rachel took us on a magical Fabio-filled adventure, and I am afraid that we and Rachel have talked about this a lot. We are frequently on the same wavelength, weirdly.
Oh, no.
Like, if we believed in crystals and stuff like that, like, well, Rachel definitely doesn't believe. I like crystals.
They're pretty.
They're pretty.
It's fine.
They're pretty. So, we're on the same wavelength. We were feeling the same things.
No.
I found this book at Goodwill, and they should have paid me to take it off of their hands. Rachel, I'm going to send you the link now.
Oh, good.
You ready?
No, but sure.
Sure.
I've already been in Renaissance times once. Why again?
There you go.
That's fun. No.
Where'd I put it?
Okay. Oh. The Dragon and the Jewel by Virginia Henley. It says, let's see, the best in romantic fiction, according to Rendezvous, which I have a feeling I'm going to take umbrage with that. Did I use that word right?
Read the top line.
From the New York Times best-selling author of A Woman of Passion.
Oh,
it
no.
It means nothing.
Mine says the New York Times. Oh, okay. What'd you say?
The Medieval Plantagenet Trilogy? Is that it? What do you want me to read?
Mine at the top says the New York Times best-selling author of Enslaved and Desired. She has a book called Enslaved.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Apparently, on the Amazon one picture, they decided to go with the slightly better A Woman of Passion.
I can't imagine right. why. Well,
no idea. So, okay. So there is the cover is this like sky-ish sort of background that has like it's pink at the top and then it goes to yellow and then it goes to purple. So either they're on another planet or it is the apocalypse. There's a castle. And then there's a big flag in the front that's like very like medieval kind of flag and has a dragon on it and it's yellow and it's whipping in the wind. And that's it. And I have to assume that the dragon is an asshole, but that's just my initial assumptions based on
the
cover.
Well, this book is based off of the Plantagenets, the royal family in the 13th century. And the dragon is not their symbol. Oh. So I don't know why that dragon is on there.
Oh, I didn't even know what the Plantagenet or whatever was. So, okay. All right. Cool. Oh, Margie, I just rolled down to the description and literally the third word.
Go on, Rachel. Go on. Come on. You can do it.
Here, boy.
With her sapphire eyes mm-hmm. and silken dark hair, mm-hmm. Princess Eleanor was a bewitching beauty made for a man's pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Good for her. Mm-hmm. You know what? Mm-hmm. Also, she looks the exact same as Reyna from the last episode.
Yep.
Once a child bride, but widowed at a tender age, she swore never to marry again and took a vow of eternal chastity. Until Simon de Montfort marched into England and set his smoldering, dark gaze upon her, King Henry's youngest daughter.
Okay, but which Henry?
The royal family's Henry most II. Precious jewel.
Oh, okay.
Bold, arrogant, and invincible, the towering Norman knight inspired awe in the bravest of men and a reckless desire in Eleanor's untried heart.
Boy. Great.
Mm-hmm.
You are not wrong, huh? We picked upsettingly similar books.
Mm-hmm.
I would also, and here's something even crazier. You know how in the last book, Ranulf had been sent off to become a knight from a total asshole?
Mm-hmm.
That asshole's name was de Montfort.
Oh my god! That is crazy!
Only one of two options. One, authors couldn't come up with better names. Two, these take place in the same cinematic universe. You cannot... I have to go with number two.
Okay, so here's the thing. All right. So here's the thing. This is actually historical. It is historical fiction.
Oh, God.
Which makes it worse.
It's not like a fantasy representation of historical fiction. They tried. Okay.
They took from actual historical events, Miss Henley did. And you would not guess that from the front or the back cover, because it does not mention that it's historical fiction.
I had little bit of I knew this book was going to be bad, because again, Margie and I have had a bad book off going for the past couple days of like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I did make a bingo card, Margie.
Yay. I'm sure there are going to be more than the list than I even made. So it's going to be great, Rachel. It's going to be great.
I put everything I could possibly think of on this whiteboard in my 5x5 thing. So
you ready?
No, hit me.
Okay. So the triggers are
Go slow so I can mark them off of my list.
Suicide ideation.
Oh, yep. Oh, got that one.
Pedophilia.
Ooh, hang on. Does child abuse count?
Child abuse counts. That's pedophilia.
Okay, all right.
Violence.
Oh, I do have general violence on here.
Emotional abuse.
Emotional manipulation. Got mm-hmm. that one.
Grooming.
I didn't get that one.
Stockholm syndrome.
No, I didn't get that one either.
Vore.
I do have vore. Was that it?
For now.
So there wasn't, is there rape?
There is.
Or sexual assault?
No.
Kidnapping?
No.
Horse mutilation?
No.
I put that on here. Just in case. Yacht violence. Oh,
there's
obviously
poisoning.
Not.
There's poisoning.
Ooh, so like murder or death?
Yes.
Okay, I got death. Cool. Real quick, I'm just going to go through my list real quick just to make sure I'm not missing any. Politics?
Yeah, there's politics.
Okay. The dog is not okay.
The dog, all animals are okay.
Okay, homophobia?
No homophobia.
Child death?
No child death.
Gaslighting?
Yes, I would say there is gaslighting.
Mob stuff?
No mob stuff.
Fire?
No fire.
Car accident? Probably not.
No car accident. Vroom, motherfucker.
Racism?
Yes, racism.
Human trafficking?
No human trafficking.
Slavery?
No slavery.
Animal abuse?
No animal abuse.
Drugs or guns?
You know what? There actually is animal abuse. Okay. No drugs or guns. No drugs or guns.
Well, unfortunately, I didn't get any, but I was only two away, so
good for you.
I think it was more of my placement that it was the problem. I'm honestly really upset there's not horse mutilation in it, but I did have it on my list just in case.
Okay, so are you ready, Rachel? Are you ready for this?
No, hit me. Okay. Yes, I'm so ready.
So I just have to introduce a few characters because it will make it easier going forward. Okay, so we have Eleanor Plantagenet, who she is Princess of England and Countess of Pembroke. She's got dark black hair that goes down to her waist, deep blue eyes the color of Persian sapphires, and she's known throughout the land as the king's precious jewel.
Okay, you know, Persian sapphires, right. Very different than any other sapphires,
right? And then so she has two brothers, Henry and Richard. Henry is going to be king. So, and he's king at a very young age. I think he's maybe even was crowned maybe at 7. So, really young, because both of their father died, the king, and their mother was a piece of shit. And when the king died, she was like, fuck you, and left her kids and went to marry her lover. So their mom is gone.
Okay. So that makes it creepier that she's the king's jewel. Want that put out there.
Oh, it gets worse. Okay, so the government of the time, so Parliament, is really close friends with this guy, the Marshall family in England, because the Marshalls are super fucking wealthy. And right now, the government is not.
Okay, so real quick, historical context-wise, since this is actually, like, historical based in history, what, like, are we, like, at Crusades times? Henry VIII?
1260s.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, the 13th century, isn't that 13th?
Okay.
Yeah.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Crusades, dates. So, yeah, in Crusades times.
Okay.
Actually.
Okay.
Great.
Great. Awesome. So that was also happening, I guess. Government is like really loves the Marshall family. Basically, they're just super wealthy. So William Marshall, who is, I want to say that he's like 36 or something. He may be older than that. Marries Eleanor, our girl, when she is 9.
You know what I said last time about like, different times?
9.
There it is.
9.
Oh, good
She was
Lord.
9.
Sweet
so,
God.
So he is trying to be the best guy that he can't be. Like, he's trying to be a good person.
Okay.
Good on him. I have trouble with him later. But he is very much this father figure because he really just took care of her and his and her siblings because her parents were gone, right? And so she was kind of raised as like a hellion child. And so when they get married, he stipulates, he's like, all right, she's going to move into an all-female household. This nunnery is going to take care of her. I'm going to pay for it all. And she's going to stay at Windsor Castle and be educated and become a fine young lady. And then I will come back and see her. Like, and then we will be like actually married and live a married life together as husband and wife.
Okay. So like for now, good on him.
Yes.
Cause damn, history was shitty to women.
Yes. Yes. So, and he goes off, he might be fighting in the Crusades. It's just not described in this book as the Crusades, but he goes like fighting in France to take back English land there. And he's fighting for the king and all of this stuff. William Marshall.
Honestly, pick a war.
Pick a war. Any war.
There's so many.
There's so many. So he comes back to the to England pretty victorious. Like, he's won his battles, and he comes back to the king, and he's talking with the king. They're chilling, and he sees this woman come off a boat near, I think they're at the Tower in London. So he sees a woman come off this barge, and he's like, who's that? She is fine. And Henry laughs and is like, you don't recognize your own wife? It's been 6 years. So she is now 15.
Woman, loosely in quotes. Good.
Yeah, yeah.
Good. Yeah. Okay, it's been 6 years, so he is 45.
Yeah.
This is like...
Oh, and Jane also, Eyre, when she's 9 and at their wedding... Like, you would not know that she's 9. She has behavior that is really creepy for someone her age. Like, she's, like, grabbing his thigh under the table kind of shit. And, like, grabbing his arm. And it's like, he's like, no! You are a child! Yep.
Okay, we all knew Jane Eyre was, like, kind of fucked up because of age difference. Mm-hmm. This is that.
Yep.
Way to the extreme.
So the Countess of Pembroke grew into a young womanhood with a vast knowledge of the world, yet not worldly in any way. She grew up innocent and ignorant of all venal matters. So.
What is venal?
Sexual. Like, she has no knowledge of the sexy stuff at all. So.
Well, that is what you need to be a worldly human, is to understand all of the... You have to spend at least... 45 minutes with the village prostitute in order to know all that shit.
So Eleanor has now grown into a beautiful minor. She is 15.
Yeah.
She is now 15, and Will is very, very into her now. You know, now that she's a teenager.
Yeah, I mean, again, remember? 15. She's basically in the middle of her midlife crisis at this point.
And
given the time period.
He also describes her breasts as tilting upwards and, like, tilting up. And I'm just imagining it like the curly ends of elf shoes.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I mean, they wore that on their shoes a lot, I think, at some point in history. Maybe it was that time, and they also liked it in their boobs.
Right, maybe.
Who knows?
Maybe, who knows? So, now Will is, like, into her, right? So he's spending some time with her. And despite his attention, because of some words that Will shared with his sister Isabella that Eleanor heard, Eleanor is convinced that Will does not want or love her, and so she promises herself that she will become everything that he wants, even if it means throwing away her own personality.
Healthy.
So Will and Eleanor continue flirting at the Tower of London, because, you know, it's fine. And Will is, like, really charmed with her. He's like, wow, the nuns over there at Windsor did a great job. She's a fine lady now. I'm so proud. And you know what? It's time for her to have her own castle. So they ride out to this castle together with Richard, Eleanor's brother, and Will's sister, Isabella, who is married but ends up fucking Richard. And Will is very unhappy about that.
Wait.
Yeah, it's very confusing.
Richard's Will's brother?
Will's sister, Isabella, fucks Eleanor's brother, Richard.
Okay, got it.
And so then, get out your board.
Also, wasn't the tower, I was going to say, wasn't the Tower of London like a prison?
It was also a castle at one point. It wasn't just a prison.
Oh, okay, okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, right, it was like a super fancy castle at one point.
Well,
yeah.
Thankfully, I still have the castle that I was given when I was 15. So, you know,
yeah,
womanhood.
Mm-hmm. It's convenient, isn't it? So Will tells Richard, all right, you're going to France to basically end a war there. I'm going to banish you there so that you stop fucking my sister. So then.
Okay, sure. Why not?
More side plot. King Henry III is married to Queen Eleanor of Normandy. Because that is super convenient and easy to remember, right? So now we have two Eleanors in the plot. We have Queen Eleanor and we have Princess Eleanor.
And Queen Eleanor is from Normandy, which is also where our dragony boy is going to be from.
Yes.
Good. Great. Yeah. Fantastic. Yep. Awesome.
So Queen Eleanor is a total bitch, though, who is super jealous of Princess Eleanor for her beauty, for her money, for her husband, because Queen Eleanor is into Will. And Queen Eleanor vows to pull King Henry away from his sister. She tries to get some of her French courtiers to fuck Princess Eleanor. So she's like,
what?
She tries to get like some of Queen Eleanor tries to get some of her French courtiers, like the people that she brought with her from France, to fuck Princess Eleanor, to like destroy her virtue,
like rape her.
Yeah.
And men,
not rape her, they're trying to seduce her.
Ah,
yeah,
right,
use that French charm.
Good. Fantastic.
So, and Will and princess have another enemy.
Was it France at this point?
They're not in France. They're still in England.
Well, but was it actually France? Or was it Gaul?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So, let's see. Princess Eleanor and Will have another enemy, who is this Count Frollo's type named Winchester, who has designs to be King Henry's right-hand man. And right now, that right-hand man is still Will due to, like, he has a lot of money, but also just loyalty. He's been a really good friend to King Henry for a long time.
Right.
But Winchester's determined to destroy this. And the way that he's trying to destroy this is he started screwing Princess Eleanor's maid in a confession booth. What a flea bag.
What? So I'm assuming if it's confession booth, and I'm assuming at this point England is sipping from the Catholic flavor.
Yes, it is. It is sipping from the Catholic. Yeah.
Got it.
And then he gives this maid poison to give Will and tells her it's actually Viagra to finally force Will to bang Princess Eleanor.
How much of this is actually based on history?
Not much. Not much.
Okay, because I was going to say, I would have paid so much more attention to history class shit happened.
Will is now in love with Princess Eleanor. She's 15 and he is 46.
Yeah, she's 15.
Yeah, she's 15. Okay. They still have not had sex yet, but Will is finding it harder to resist and is doing some really not great things to her while she's unaware.
Is it? Oh. Oh, I had a comment, and then you just slipped that while she's unaware thing in there, and now I have questions.
It's while she's asleep.
Mike
feels her up while she's asleep.
Oh, okay.
All right, so.
You know what? My comments are irrelevant. Just keep going.
So, Will's sister, Isabella, her husband died. So now she can marry Richard, that guy she was fucking at the beginning of the book.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they do. And on that day, Will also intends to renew his vows with Eleanor. And then, like, because now she's ready, right? She's 16 and a half at this point. She's now ready to breach that uninitiated cleft.
So, God damn it. Okay, two things. One, so technically, was it even a marriage by those standards at that point, since it hadn't been consummated? And two, this requires some explanation. Listeners, Margie and I have started an escalation. And
basically, up until this point, I think we've posted some of it on our Instagram, where yeah. one of us will just message the other person and be like, hey, hey, Margie. And then say a reference to a dick or a vagina that is written in the romance novel that's terrible. And it's starting to get worse.
Sword of fire. Like,
sword of fire. So Margie wrote one to me, and so I called her. No, I sent her a video.
Yes.
And then she called me, said it, and hung up. And then I forget what I did. And then she gave one to Zach to tell me.
That one was so my favorite.
At some point, I'm just saying it's only $3,500 to hire a skywriter. We'll see how it goes. We'll keep you abridged of the situation.
All right. So Isabel and Richard get married, and Eleanor and Will get remarried. They party that night. Then both parties head to bed, where Will finally breaches that virgin barrier.
Good for him.
And then he... And
by that, I mean not.
I had to say this straight. Okay.
Oh, no.
And then he dies in her.
What? Wait. The culmination of this man's life is having sex with a 16-year-old and then literally dying in her vagina. Boy, that is gonna fuck her up for a long time.
It does.
Yeah. And holy, what a piece of trash.
Well, so he was poisoned. That's why he died inside her.
Oh, good.
Winchester right. did manage to poison him. So
on his wedding, that's a major dick move.
I know. The court is thrown into complete disarray. And in the midst of all this, Eleanor, in her real, it's actually like her grief is just so sad. You know, she's 16. She's feeling mm-hmm. like all of her emotions on the 1,000th level and has no idea how to handle them.
And also had sex for the first time involving death, which again, that's how psychopaths are right. made. And also like, I know this doesn't matter, but my curiosity won't let me not ask. Mm-hmm. Did she get off first?
No.
Okay, no. Did he?
I don't know, because he says, so the last thing he says before he dies is, forgive me, Eleanor. And then he dies.
Okay, one, that's creepy. Two, you would think he would have been, like, feeling bad up to that point. Like, someone doesn't just, like, go that long and then just, dead. Like, I don't think that's how poison works.
He had some, so he got up from the table to, like, follow Eleanor to their chambers, and he had, like, a moment of excruciating pain. And he was like, that was weird. Well, okay. And then he had another one when he was carrying her up into the bed.
I don't think that there, granted, I'm not a poisoner, but I don't think there's a poison out there that would cause those symptoms, that he would be well enough to have sex and then just die.
Yep. Okay. You would think. So.
Whoopsie daisy doodly doo.
Did you just fall asleep for 5 minutes? So Eleanor, in her grief, like I said, it's just so sad to read. Like, she's just, what am I going to do now with the rest of my life? Because this was my destiny.
She's 16.
Right, and she's 16, so she's basically an old maid. She swears on a Bible before the archbishop that she will die a virgin and a widow.
How's that blasphemy going to go?
It's going to go really well. Well, they love it. They're like, yeah, heck yeah, sign right here, bitch. We want you in the
church. Sacrifice for God? Do it.
So for a year, Princess Eleanor wallows in her own castle on the outskirts of London, basically with a very small court, just like a ghost. Like, she is just, her passion is gone, her heart is gone, and she really doesn't know what she's going to do with her life. She doesn't really want to be a nun, but she's thinking about it because she's like, I don't know how to live without Will either. And well, in those times...
I was going to say, if we know anything about God at that time, it's that he was like, horny for some self-sacrifice.
Oh, totally.
I'm going to hell for that sentence. Well, I
mean, welcome to hell. I'll see you down there. So
yeah, I was already there, but it's fine.
Right. So in those times, you couldn't just be a woman on your own. You were either married, a nun, a queen, or a slut. Those were your four options.
What if I'm all of those?
Yeah, exactly. But now you can be all of those. But back then, you could only be one. So...
Wow. God, thank God for feminism, right?
Right. So she kind of is starting to wake up out of this, like, I don't know, horror state of, like, grief and guilt. She thinks that she killed him, too, which helps.
Her vagina is deadly.
That's what people at the court are saying.
Poor girl.
I know. So one day she's like, I gotta get out of this fucking castle for 5 minutes. So she goes out falconing with a bird that William had gifted her. Like, she's on her horse. She's like, okay, finally feeling a little bit of life here. And, you know, she feels that until another falcon comes and rips her falcon's throat out. And she's furious. It's, this guy's name is Simon de Montfort. And he's basically what? Like, no use crying over spilled falcon.
Okay. Okay. One, that was phenomenal. Two, what? And I cannot stress this enough. The fuck?
Right? Oh, right? So she goes into a quote unquote Plantagenet rage, which is a family thing. She like okay, yells great. Obscenities at him, like jumps on him, screams him, and is scratches his cheek, and is just a vicious cat. Now, granted, this guy is huge and like 8 feet tall and broad and just enormous. Like, think Jason Momoa. That's how he's described.
I mean, one, poor Jason.
I know.
Compared to this. But two, I mean, that rage thing, it really tracks. When you have that much inbreeding, mm-hmm. It just happens.
Fair. Okay. So, you know, this is happening and he's like holding her off really easily because she's tiny and he's huge. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, he gets horny. He's like, I don't know whose mistress you are, but I'm going to buy you from him. And she's like, I am no one's mistress. The person who has my heart is my husband and he's dead. So fuck off. And Simon leaves without her name, thinking she is someone's mistress.
Wow. God. Well, okay, I officially concede you definitely had the worst book, and also I'm broken.
Yeah,
I'm dead.
Yeah,
just keep going.
It gets worse. It gets worse.
Why?
So
Marty, why?
So he continues to stalk her, essentially, like for several days. And Richard is so Simon de Montfort has helped England at this point win several wars because he's a warlord. And so he's good friends with like King Henry and Prince Richard. And they are talking, so like Simon thinks that he hasn't met Eleanor before because they're like Henry and Richard are talking about her and they're like, oh yeah, it's really sad, like she agreed to be a widow and a virgin forever. And Simon's like, ugh, she doesn't even sound that pretty, like she sounds kind of like a bitch. And Richard kind of looks at him and is like, you saw her this morning, she was in the street, she was the one you were staring at. And he's like, oh, hey.
Ooh.
So he.
Oh, it's that bitch. A virgin forever, you say. Boy, that doesn't sound like a challenge, doesn't it?
And not at all. So and that's pretty much what he thinks. He's like, I never back down from a challenge. So he continues to follow her, including back to her castle. And he like climbs up her walls outside of her castle and drops down into her gardens and like corners her in there. At another point, he climbs up the tower to her bedroom and like is laying in her bed when she goes to bed at night.
Hey, fellas, that shit ain't romantic.
It's not.
That's creepy.
But
to be fair, finger strength, I guess, but no, still creepy.
So,
at least we know he can curl her vagina with his fingers.
I'm just making sure I'm getting the plot straight. Cause like a lot of things, the similar things happen again and again, like him going into the garden, right? And so I'm like, wait, I'm confused.
Which time did he go into the garden this time?
Yeah, exactly. So, let's see. But the exchanges with Simon kind of slowly bring Eleanor out of her shell, and she's realizing, she's like, you know, I don't think I really want to be a nun. I don't think that's my life. Like, I think that I am too obsessed with like fun and adventure and jewels, honestly, and my own vanity to become a nun.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I feel like she's a woman in Crusades times. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she would have even had the own like the ability to say she was going to become a nun. I feel like she, oh, you're a widow and you're a prominent like historical figure, we need to make an alliance. Bye.
Well, yeah, well, And you know, I think that that's just the historical fiction aspect of it. Because in this book, like, her brothers go back and forth. Richard is usually a pretty good guy, but Henry, her other brother, is, you know, he's like, from one moment, he's like, oh, I'm so glad. Like, I understand you want some solitude and to take this vow of chastity. That's cool. And then but he seems always happy with her decisions, which I'm like, that's not accurate. She's making her own decisions. No. You would not be happy with that. Okay.
No. And how sad is it that the fiction is the part where the woman is given agency? Yay.
Right. So, history. Right. So, Eleanor tells her mother superior of the convent that's helped her get through a lot of her grief through like charity work and stuff. She's like, look, I love what y'all are doing here. Like, I think it's great for you guys, but it's just not for me. But her mother superior's like, listen, spend one night at the convent and like a super private room with just you and the Bible, and I'm sure Jesus will call your heart. And
I know what's going to happen. So, he's going to sneak in. They're going to bang in the convent. And yeah, Jesus is going to show her something.
Close. Close, but no, almost cigar. You got like a cigarette.
Okay.
So
well, not as good, but
that
I'll take
is it. So that's pretty much what happens. Simon does show up in that convent. He's like, I am going to convince you that you are not for this life by fucking. But unfortunately, maybe fortunately, our girl has PTSD from a guy literally dying inside of her.
No.
So she's not exactly comfortable with this arrangement. And he's like, oh, no. Well, I guess I shouldn't force her. I need to make her comfortable with me so that she'll marry me.
You know what a really good way to do that is?
What?
Sneaking into her place and stalking her.
Right, exactly.
That's a great way to do it.
So, and excuse me. You know, the author writes all these encounters like very romantically, and it's not, because it's just creepy. And then the other thing is that, like, in this scene in particular, I was thinking to myself, like, okay, but you have to wonder to yourself, does she have any other choices other than to let him like cuddle her and touch her up all night? I mean, if she screams, then she'll be seen as a harlot by the Sisters of the Order. She wouldn't be able to join the nunnery, even if she wanted to. And they would probably tell her brothers that she was a slut. So no.
Yeah.
No. She doesn't. No.
No.
All right. No. So, oh boy.
Oh, good Lord.
It's a lot, Rachel. Great. It's just a fucking lot.
Just, it's not going to get better, is it?
No, it's not. So, but despite this, Simon, like, despite her trepidation, the fact that she's like, no, we can't do this. Like, I cannot be in a relationship with you. I made a vow of chastity. I have certain obligations of a woman of my rank. I can't do it. He's like, nah, I'm going to marry you. We're going to get married. I'm not worried about all that shit. So he's like, and he's thinking to himself, he's like, damn, how can I get her to marry me? I know, I'll get her pregnant.
But wait.
So he,
hold the phone. Hold the phone.
Yeah, yeah.
He said he was going to make her comfortable with him so they'd get married first.
Yep.
Does he know how pregnancy works?
Well, he wanted to have sex that night. Like, he wanted to. He just was like, oh, but she's not. He's basically, like, trying to, like, coddle her into it, into having sex with him. Yeah. 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 He's like determined. He's like, he thinks that he's in love with her, which I think is arguable. And so he wants to have sex with her because he's in love with her, but he also wants to entrap her so that she'll marry him, be forced to marry him.
I got nothing.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah. Yeah. Just yeah. 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 Keep, so he I, really wants
nope,
to.
Not,
so he really wants to lay her to A, keep her from going into the convent with pleasurable coitus, and B, get her pregnant so she will be forced to marry him. So that's what his thought process is as he's going into the convent to, he thinks he's going to have sex with her, but it doesn't end up happening because he's like, oh, PTSD. There's a lot more scenes of him just showing up in the garden and her being like, no, we mustn't, and running away back into her tower. A lot of that kind of stuff. And she's finally like, you know what? I've fucking had enough of this shit. I'm leaving. And so she tells her brothers, I'm going to this castle. I don't want to be disturbed. leave me alone. And they're like, cool, fine. And it's up in Wales. So, and it's almost winter time. So she knows, she's like, all right, no one's going to be able to come up there and bother me, including Simon. So I'll finally be on my own. So she goes to that first castle, but then the next day she goes to another castle and tells the people in that original castle, don't tell anyone where I'm going. I do not want anyone to know. So
clever girl.
I know. She's really, really trying, right? To like,
how old is she at this point?
She is 17.
Good.
I think in the real history, it was 7 years after the death of her first husband that she and Simon met. But in this book, she made it only a year. So, you know, it's fine.
Ah.
Yeah.
Good. Good. Yeah.
But Simon keeps showing up at her garden and is like, where the fuck is Eleanor? I'm not letting that bitch get away from me. No way. So he seduces Queen Eleanor to tell him where Princess Eleanor went.
What?
Yeah.
What?
And it's not the first time that he does that. All right. So he goes to that.
They actually have sex?
Not sex. Just like canoodling, basically.
Okay. Yeah. Great.
Very flirtatious good. Looks, Man. Remarks, etc.
Fantastic.
So he goes to that castle where Queen Eleanor thinks she is, because that's like her covered castle, right? And he seduces a maid in that castle to find out that his princess is in another castle.
God damn it.
Aren't you proud of me?
I'm very proud of you. And that goddamn it refers to both you and him.
Yeah.
What the fuck is happening? I legitimately really want to know what the actual history of this.
All right. So meanwhile, Eleanor is enjoying her solitude at one of her castles in North Wales. So she's got the court around her that she wants, and she's actually like excited to kind of enjoy herself, right? Because she feels much more free up here. It's one of Will's, her late husband's castles. So it's in the middle of winter, and a snowstorm has just hit, but it's over. And she's like, I want to go out falconing. I want to be on my horse. I want to be outside. And her maid's kind of like, I don't know. But she's like, no, I'll be fine. It'll be great. I can't wait. It's going to be awesome to get outside. So she does. And but unfortunately, her horse gets spooked, and she falls from her horse and hits her head and is knocked unconscious. So.
Good. I think I see where this is going.
So it's a day later, and Simon arrives. Yeah. At her castle, only to find that same maid in a panic. Eleanor has been missing for 24 hours.
In snow? And she wouldn't have survived that.
So in the middle of a snowstorm. Yeah. So Simon
There's
goes
no way.
So Simon goes back out into the snowstorm to find Eleanor. And I do have like some context for what happens next. And he does some and he finds her underneath some snow and some fir branches. So from when she had been knocked from her horse. He reasons that she has been out in the elements for 30 hours without food or water, basically freezing. I asked someone who is training to be a physician's assistant, he's only 6 months away, whether this was possible. And he said that it's unlikely but possible that she would survive in the elements that long, because he's basically said like her body would go into like a low energy state if she stayed at the right temperature for long enough. And so she could have survived. However, he was like, yeah, but that head injury, like that's sketchy. So, you know. So when Simon finds her, he actually believes that she's dead because she's so pale, but he picks her up and he discovers there's no rigor mortis. So he's like, oh my God, she's alive. So he carries her into a small lodge, strips off her clothes and lays her in a bed, and then massages brandy into her body to warm her. No, this would not work, according to the physician's assistant.
No, it wouldn't. I was going to say the other thing is like, rigor mortis is a phase that the body goes through, but it is not permanent. Like, the body is movable again after a while.
After death, you mean?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure if any of the true crime podcasts that I've listened to are true, then maybe. I could be wrong.
He got some brandy massage the brandy on her body. So she's warming up, I guess. And then he feeds her some of his blood. For lifeblood, for sustenance.
Oh, I forgot this is historical fiction. Right. So, right. Yeah, I knew the vampires were going to come into play at some point.
So, you know, history. He finally does probably what he should have done from the beginning. He gets her underneath some blankets and works on getting a fire up and getting some food.
Wait, he hadn't even started a fucking fire. No, he hadn't
started a fucking fire. He did the other things first.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Science hadn't been invented yet. Jesus.
Right. So she wakes up, and a little over a day later, they return to the castle where everyone had assumed she was dead. And good. So a couple of days later, Simon and Eleanor go horseback riding together. And because, you know, now they're romantically involved because he saved her life.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah. I forgot.
That's how romance works. Automatic. You can get kidnapped and your life is saved.
Yeah, it's one of the two.
Right, it's one of the two. And so this part is ridiculous. Oh my God. So they find wild ponies. They see wild ponies like running out in the Scottish Highlands, right? I don't know. I don't fucking know what it looks like there. And he picks her up and puts her on top one of these wild ponies. And the pony takes off. And he's running behind, he's galloping behind with his destrier horse, like super, you know, macho horse. And then he yells out, "Jump!" And she jumps off this horse. He catches her, and then they both fall off of his horse, and they, like, roll to the ground.
Okay, one, that would fucking hurt. Two, what? And three, I guess... I think we might have gotten it wrong. I think that the second stage in any relationship might not be birthing a horse together. It might just be bonding over horses.
It might you know what? You might be right. All right, where's this fucking book?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is where... Oh, gosh. Oh, fuck. Where'd the plot of this book go? All right, this is the point where Eleanor is like, you know what? I'm into you. Let's be lovers. Let's fuck. So Simon's
plan... How's that PTSD treating you, girl?
Simon's plan is working great for him because he's like, sweet, I got her. Like, now all he has to do is get her pregnant.
Okay.
Yeah. So they become lovers. Like, they start sleeping with one another. But at one point, there's a point where, like, Eleanor sort of, like, wakes up out of this, like, sex-filled fugue state. And is like, what the fuck am I doing? I took a vow. We can't keep doing this. Like, this is not okay. And at this point, Simon...
What happened to the PTSD?
It's been months. It's been months that they've been fucking. And they're back in London at this point. And Simon lets her go. He's like, well, it's too late now. He already knows that she's pregnant. Because her boobs have gotten really tender and big. So he's like, she's going to have to come back to me eventually. Yeah.
I still want to know what happened to the magical, mystical PTSD. That's just gone now.
A lot of fucking. A lot of fucking.
Okay. Yeah. That was the problem in the first place, though.
Yeah. Right. So. He does not realize that. He does not tell her that he suspects that she's pregnant. Because he's like, well.
This is like a horrible combination of Rogue, the one Fabio book, and the one with the chick that goes to the, like, alternate universe and the dude removes her birth control without telling her. It's like a horrible child of those two.
Right. So a couple of months go by. I think it's actually, so they get back to London and she breaks up with him pretty quick because she's like, we can't keep doing this. And then 4 months go by since she's last seen him. And she's like, hey, none of my dresses are fitting. Hey, my belly is looking super oh my God. And she realizes that she's pregnant.
That's 4 months of not having a period. Do you think that maybe that would have tipped her off first?
You would think, but no.
And morning sickness?
Right, and she had that too, and she didn't put it all together until her belly started getting big. So somehow,
just a mild case of the plague.
At the same time that she's having this meltdown, Simon, like, with his, like, I don't know, his mind powers, knows that she's having a meltdown and, like, picks her up in his tower and is like, babe, it's gonna be okay, don't worry, we're gonna get married, it's gonna be fine. And she's like, I have no choice now, you have to marry me. And she's not, and it's really not even okay with that. Like, so they get married. So she goes to her brother Henry. She's like, I'm in love with Simon de Montfort and I need to marry him. And Henry's like, great, this is awesome. Like, Simon is a great warlord. It'll be great to have him on my side. This is so much easier than paying him a bunch of money to be one of my soldiers or warlords or whatever. So sure, yeah, marry him. So they get married, like, in dead secret in the middle of the night. And then they kind of just bolt from the castle. Did you freeze?
No. No, this is just my face right now.
All right, so this is kind of where the plot just, Rachel, really goes sideways, because for...
Where the fuck was it before?
Because for the rest of the book, it's really just him getting mad at her and her getting mad at him, and then they make up through sex. And they do this when they get banished from England for their marriage, and they end up in Egypt. And then they do this when they get back from Egypt.
Why are they in Egypt?
So, at the end of this book, she has had at least one of his children and may have been pregnant with the... is at least pregnant with the second one, if she has not already had it. And, literally right here, it says, my love, my torment. So tells you what their relationship is like.
Wait. Okay, so they got banished from England because of their marriage?
Yeah, they got banished.
Why?
Because, so she made a vow of chastity and widowhood for the rest of her life on the Bible from the archbishop. So the church did not approve of their marriage. So...
Got it.
He actually, they might not have been, I don't think they were actually, I'm sorry, like, I honestly just, like, skimmed through the end of this book because I could not stand it anymore. I'm really sorry. so their marriage was, like, deemed to be invalid because she, of this vow that she had. So our boy actually goes to Rome and pays the Pope a bunch of money to declare it valid.
Okay, that actually is probably accurate for that time.
Right. Yeah. And then so they come back and it's accurate. And then he gets back and King Henry, like, turns his back on them and is like, no, I never set up that secret wedding for the two of you. I never did that. Why would I ever do that? Yeah, and it's just great. And then at the end of the book, it all works out and everybody's happy. They're having sex. They're getting mad at each other and having sex to make up, and the end.
Do they actually say they love each other? Like, does the book end with them saying they love each other?
They love each other, supposedly.
What?
Yeah. Let me just... Oh, and I have a quote. I have a quote.
God.
So this is between an exchange between Henry Richard, I believe, or maybe William Marshall, and Simon de Montfort.
Okay.
As they drew the weapons from their sheaths, all three men shared a moment of zeal that only glorious battle could generate. They tasted bloodlust on their tongues and experienced such a rush in their veins, they all three became sexually aroused.
That's how this book is written. I'm exhausted.
So we all know the only way to arouse men is through blood and violence.
I mean, so here's the thing. The last 100 pages of this book, like, nothing happens that hasn't happened before. Like, the only difference is that they're, like, dealing with shit in Egypt, but it's the same shit. Like,
why?
They get mad at each other for, like, flirting with other people or supposed flirting with other people, then they have sex to make up.
Just in Egypt. Like, is there any actual point of them being in Egypt?
I'm sure there. Let me. I don't remember. Oh, because, okay, so. Oh, right, okay. So, that Winchester guy at the beginning of the book, he also doesn't want Simon around. So, he has them excommunicated from the church. And he, like, makes it King Henry do it. Yeah, it's not good. So it's not.
What? Was there even a plot? I think this might be the first one that you haven't been able to finish.
I feel like I've shamed our family. We brought dishonor on our house. But, like, yeah, I think the plot was I think the author was trying to say the plot was Princess Eleanor trying to find her destiny. I think that was meant to be the plot. And her destiny was being fucked over by men.
I mean, honestly, what woman's destiny wasn't that at that time period?
Very true. But very true. But
I want to know what happened to the mystical, magical PTSD, because that just straight up, like, left.
Yeah. I mean, a good fucking will do that to you, Rachel.
But fucking was the problem. The first time, she couldn't even get around to the fucking.
So he, the first time, she couldn't even get around to it because she was too nervous. The next time, they only get half of it in there.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the next
time. And then he dies. Wait.
No, he does not
no,
die.
No, it only happened once. Damn it. I was hoping.
He does not die. Unfortunately, I wish. Because I didn't really like Will Marshall that much just because he was, like, suddenly okay with, he was okay with fucking a 15-year-old.
Yeah.
Or, like, interested in fucking a 15-year-old. You should not be interested in fucking a 15-year-old. But I really don't like Simon. He's just, like, so, there's a lot of language, too, of him saying, like, I'm the man. I get to make the decisions because I am the man. A lot of that.
And, again, I feel like this falls into, obviously, the same category as my book from the last episode, where it's, yes, I appreciate and understand the historically accurate aspects of this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something to be romanticized right. And glorified.
Exactly. Like, that's how I was feeling, too.
Very much is. Yeah, it's not okay. Really not okay.
Oh, boy. It's just...
I think I would put this one in the we don't rate it category.
Oh, yeah. We are definitely not rating it. I'm not getting into the sex. I have no interest or desire to.
No. I am, however, curious about the actual history.
Oh, yeah. Totally. And she was, I did check the history enough where I know that she was married to these two men and that she did make a vow of chastity. But,
okay.
Chastity and widowhood. But I don't know about, I mean, I doubt all of that other stuff, like where he was stalking mm-hmm. her in a garden and shit like that was all real.
Yeah.
But there was something that I read. What was it? Oh, okay. Here. After the Battle of Loos, this is the author's note on the history. After the Battle of Loos, Simon de Montfort ruled England for over 4 years. During that time, he realized his dream of seeing plain men sit in Parliament. From each city and borough, he had summoned 2 to 4 good and loyal men to sit with the peers, the barons, the bishops, and the knights to discuss the business of the realm. The story of Simon and Eleanor is one of the great love stories of the 13th century. They had 5 sons and then a daughter. Okay. After the Battle of Loos, men wrote poems in praise of Simon de Montfort.
Okay, love is a strong word.
Love is a strong word.
and also,
especially if you wrote it this way, like written this way, it does not seem like love to me. It seems like a highly volatile relationship between two people who are enormously sexually attracted to one another, but don't know how to like interact as humans.
Yeah. No. I think all in all, this is bad. This one counts as a bad.
Oh, it's a bad. It's in the bad place. And, you know, listeners, if you're curious about the ending, just know, like, they end up in England, like, with, I don't want to say power, but, like, where they should be, like, where they were at the, in a good place, in a safe and secure place, still fucking each other, like...
Still hating each other,
and, you know,
but also loving each other.
And, you know, the author glossed over the past, the fact also that Simon de Montfort and Henry III were both highly anti-Semitic. So they were trying to kick out Jews left and right.
Okay.
That's where the racism comes in.
Yeah,
there's the racism. Huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I... Romance, am I right?
Right. And, I mean, here's the other thing, too, is Christ. I got up to, you know... I'm still gonna say I finished this book because I skimmed through it, but like,
I mean, that's fair.
It's not like anything actually happened. Right, that's the thing. 500 pages and nothing happened. Like,
yeah,
like she got fucked over by men the whole book. That is what happened.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of like when she gets knocked over on her horse in the woods, and there's that whole thing where he saves her out in the woods. There's a lot of like her trying to get away from him because she's like, no, I have to get back to my castle. I've got to, you know, people are going to be worried about me. And so she gets up on her horse, like very weakly. She barely manages it because she's still recovering. And he like comes out of the lodge that they're staying in, like buck naked, and just drags her off the horse, like physically. And she's fighting him. And he's like, no, you are going to do what I say. You are going to obey me because I am the man. A lot of that happening.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Yeah. Yeah.
That hurts me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That physically hurts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, props to you for getting that far into it. Oh, no.
There's a whole other scene between these two twins who are knights for Princess Eleanor, and they're fucking this maid named Brenda, but they're taking turns within the same, like, few-hour period, and they're twins, so she can't tell them apart. So they'll be like, so she'll be like, oh, Mick, come on, let's try again. And he's like, no, 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 it's Rick this time. And she's like, right, Rick, I thought I had your name right, and she thinks it's the same dude. So she's having two different dudes fuck her because they keep coming in and out of the room, and they don't tell her that they're two different people.
What the fuck?
Yeah, so that's, like, a whole other thing that happens. Like I said, the priest, like, fucks the... Oh, that same girl who was getting fucked by those two guys, she's the one who gets fucked in the confessional booth by that... confessional booth by that flea bag. And I'm pretty sure... Oh, I should have said drugs. You were right. There are drugs in this. Because I'm pretty sure also drugging her.
Still wouldn't have gotten a bingo. And it was close.
0000000.
No, no, not even. Yeah,
doesn't get rated.
We're not rating it.
Yeah, it doesn't get rated.
Jesus.
Does not get rated.
I know, you know, that makes the fact that you were reading, since, listeners, we recorded these back to back, obviously, but the fact that, so we know what Margie was reading, the fact that you were reading Midnight in Chernobyl, how? After this, just how?
I like history. I mean, I just find it interesting, so.
Well, okay, so since we already know what you have been reading, do you have anything that you're going to be reading?
I was actually looking at my bookshelf over here, trying to decide what I'm going to read next. I might read another Michael Crichton book called Rising Sun.
Ooh.
Yeah, or I was thinking about rereading A Game of Thrones, because actually this book reminded me of a poorly written Game of Thrones. Like, all of the sex, all of the trying to character development but failing miserably. Like, just, yeah.
See, I don't like Game of Thrones, so I wouldn't have liked either.
I know, yeah. So... Anyway, but yeah, I don't know yet. That's all I got. I'm exhausted. Right.
Well, yeah, I'm tired. That was terrible.
It was awful.
Listeners, thank you so much for sticking with us for that fucking dumpster fire. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Can we? All right, let's make a pledge next time not to pick books that were the same
yes! What the
genre?
Fuck?
Oh, God, that's hilarious, though.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening, and thank you to Ayla Nariu for the use of her song, Oh Love, off the album Beheld.
Boom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, and we'll see you next time. I promise next time I will, like, thoroughly get all the way up into the hilt.
Oh, God, no.
All the way up into the hilt.
No.